Previously on 24.
I need Karen Hayes to go away.
I understand, sir.
I need the president to sign off on my proposals. She's gone from being an irritant to an obstacle. I want to talk about your husband's incompetence and you're covering it up.
I did nothing illegal or incorrect.
Your resignation within the hour.
Mr. President, I am tendering my resignation.
Is there anything I can do to change your mind?
No, sir, there is not.
Wally has earned their trust. These men know something about the bombs that we don't.
I don't think these guys you're tracking are connected to anyone.
They're not terrorists.
I'm getting Wally the hell out of there.
You spied on us? You're worse than they are!
A nuclear bomb just went off like 25 miles from here.
When I'm done with this deal, I may just buy you a small country.
Have you found an engineer?
I told you I'd find someone.
No, I will.
It's just taking longer.
Start talking, Gray.
I made a mess. Dad's trying to clean it up. What happened? He hired McCarthy to oversee the job.
So the nukes that these terrorists are in possession of, including the one that was just detonated in Valencia, were supplied by McCarthy and stolen from you.
Yes.
I'm heading to McCarthy's office in Simi Valley.
We have teams standing by. Let me know.
Stop.
It's my son. What are you doing here, Jack?
I know what you're trying to cover up. Dad Gray already told me.
McCarthy's not here.
Hey! What are you doing?
Put the gun down.
You work for me.
No, Dad, he doesn't.
You don't think I'd let you run loose without keeping an eye on you, do you?
This is insane.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 1 p.m.
Hi, this is Joseph Hodges. I'm the production designer on the show.
And my name is John Cassar. I'm the executive producer, and I directed this particular episode that starts in the bombed-out Valencia, California. Now, this was interesting because we didn't have the budget, we didn't have the time to really show a bombed-out Valencia. So this was our way of doing it, finding a neighborhood and doing a video sort of report of what it would have been like, which we do a lot on the show. It's our only way of showing that kind of thing.
Yeah, and again, your audience wouldn't be the 24 way of shooting, and the audience wouldn't be actually participating in that, so otherwise they'd be suffering.
Well, let's talk about the set to start, Mr. Hodges. This is our bunker, which is our third bunker or second bunker.
I think we've done a bunker every year.
Yeah, we always have a place that's not the White House. Now, explain why you never wanted to do the White House and the Oval Office, because I know there's reasoning behind it.
One of the reasons was always 24 to me didn't actually happen in the real America, so I really didn't want to. It's sort of a comic book.
It's our fantasy, it's spy our fantasy. America.
And we'd never seen the president in any space apart from Air Force One where our audience would recognize. So then suddenly to put him in the Oval Office actually puts him in the real world. So I always fought against that. But also, the Oval Office is a really boring space to shoot. So I think you found out.
Well, yeah, because we did have it this year. We actually started the year in the Oval Office and then moved down to this bunker space. And where it does work against us is the fact that the Oval Office, because it's one round room, doesn't afford us the foreground and the windows to look through. As you can see, actually, in this shot right here, where there's some foreground because we're looking through a window. And you see the reflection of the of the monitor on the window. So I think that was the biggest problem for me as a director. As excited as I was to shoot the Oval Office, because we hadn't done it in 6 years of shooting on the show, I realized probably after the very first scene there in the first episode, I thought,
I visited you. You'd been shooting for 2 hours.
I was already frustrated.
Yeah. So the design of the bunker was kind of a reaction to having to build the Oval Office. So I wanted to do something perhaps a little bit more outrageous than we usually do.
Well, I know there's always a nervousness, too, with your designs, because you are so far in the future. It's hard for us that live in the present.
Well, it's not future. It's stylized.
I'm just saying your designs are ahead of the game.
Right.
They're always ahead of the game. They're the newest things that are on television. So it's hard for anyone that like myself and some of the other producers, to look at it and go, okay, we are always taking a chance, but you know, you always, it always pays off. The greatest example of that is last year with Logan's Retreat, which was again very retro, but in essence ended up being almost one step ahead of the game once again. So sort of every year you were able to pull that off.
I can't get into it right now, but I've asked to be reassigned to CTU.
And then back to, of course, good old CTU.
And so, again, some of the design of the bunker was left over from when we were originally going to do this season. It was going to be set in New York.
Yeah, at some point.
Underneath the UN building. So the design was supposed to be sort of the bunker underneath the UN. And then when it moved to
Washington. That's why it had that 60s feel to it?
Well, just sort of the colors. I'd watch the interpreter, and there was a map on an office wall that was these sort of blue and yellows. And in fact, the map I've put in there is sort of a blown-up version of their smaller one. So it sort of always to tie in with that, the UN building. And then we moved it to Washington, and it was too late, really, to redesign it all. So I just went with it.
And then it's interesting because there's even a color palette change between CTU and the bunker. There's like a warmness,
yeah,
and a green and a blue.
Yeah.
Even though the blue is very different than the blue you see in CTU. CTU always has its own kind of feel to it. I mean, between the design and then Rodney's lighting, there's always sort of a very cold blue feeling to it compared to every other scene in the show.
I'll meet you back at the house then.
Just make sure. And of course, this is the episode where you find out that Jack's family is more screwed up than he is. It was interesting. I mean, it was fantastic if James Cromwell play Jack's father, and in these particular episodes, he's still the innocent. And in fact, it was really fun to try to find who this character is and try to play the dad. This is again our poor man's process. We never really travel in any vehicles. It's very rare for us to do any shots that are in moving vehicles. This is all done in studio with moving lights and rear screen projection.
When it stays tight like this, it's great.
Yeah,
it's only when it goes wide that it gets a bit dodgy.
It's when it works the best. I mean, but even in a shot like that, you're looking straight out the front window. It's a little blown out, but it still works.
It's real. It's what it would be if you were out in the street shooting.
And then we cut that directly to, as you see coming up here, you know, we'll cut directly to sort of a shot on location. This is always fun for me, finding these sort of outside of LA locations. Now, you know, what people don't see, of course, just to the left there, there's a suburb.
Right.
There's a suburb and a highway and people going by. I know when Kiefer first got out of the van, he said, "There's a suburb right there. Can they see what's happening?" I said, "Well, they can, but we'll never see that on camera. So no one will ever know that we're not in the middle of the desert." And it's very realistic here in LA. I mean, I didn't realize till I moved out here that virtually in 5 minutes you can be at a place like this and be completely isolated. LA really is a desert city. You can go anywhere very quickly and be out of town. You know, and this was fun sort of designing this and, again, saying it with no words, having two guys walk up to a hole in the ground with a cement mixer sitting there. Gives you an idea of what's going to happen without saying it. Then it was interesting that sort of Dad and Jack get to
partner up
a little bit. Jack doing, of course, the majority of the work, being Jack. I always like the contrast, especially in the day part of our show. I think when we go to night, it's a little easier for us to stay moody and to have a style, because we can kind of go anywhere and it feels, you know, it has a style. I find during the day it becomes a little more difficult if we're in normal neighborhoods and
especially somewhere like this,
you know,
where
this
there is no cover, or
that's right.
You know, if the sun's above you over your head, it's going to look like it,
and that works for us. I think if we're going to be outside during the day, I'd rather go there. I'd rather see the sun and see the brightness and play that beat. And again, you know, the contrast becomes, you know, great between CTU and being in a place like this.
He didn't tell us everything.
Based on what?
This is a tough script, sort of just to play all this beat, because you know you find out a little later that everything was a bit of a setup. So these are always the hardest things to play from an audience point of view and not give it away, because you don't want the audience to be ahead of you. So
right.
It's always making the little adjustments that we make to make sure that the audience is really where Jack is. You know, you want your audience never to be too far ahead of Jack. Now, this was not one of your favorite setups, but I think we did pretty good. I mean, we're going to tell people what it is.
That's the rear projection?
Yeah, they'll never notice. Now we told them, they're going to notice.
The wall behind her. No, that's real, that one, isn't it?
No, that's
the rear projection.
It fooled you again.
Oh, yeah, because the painting's at an angle.
We shot at a hotel in the episode before, and it was just an expense to go from one short little scene to move a whole unit to the hotel, which wasn't far from our studio, but still. So we actually knew we were going to shoot that, so we did a rear screen projection. So that wall that you saw behind the girl was really just a screen. We built this part of the hotel, just that one wall and a little bit of door frame, and then that wall was a rear screen projection. But, you know, again, it worked and saved some money.
Yeah. Didn't look so bad, that one.
There are hazmat guys making sure Valencia is safe for everyone. I mean, that was one of our biggest concerns because, you know, the first thing that, you know, when they write there's a nuclear bomb goes off, both you and I look at each other and go, we've got to tell them, we won't be able to show that.
Right.
I mean, there's just not enough money and not enough time for us to show a ground zero of a nuclear bomb going off. I mean, we could do the mushroom cloud, which I think we did pretty well. That worked for us anyways, but to actually show ground zero is impossible. So that was our alternative, was to put up the barriers and say that was the edge of the safe zone and know that ground zero is somewhere in there. And we picked Valencia, which, you know, some people I've noticed on the internet think it's a fictional town. Well, in actual fact, it's not.
No.
There is a Valencia north of L.A., and it's far enough away that, you know, it's a major suburb like most big cities have.
We were scouting and I went shopping and somebody saw the 24 on the hat and it was in Valencia and they asked me, did I work on the show? And I said, yes. And he said, well, thank you for bombing our town or nuking our town.
Sorry, so. People of Valencia, we apologize. And then here we have a house, which we don't, you know, for a television show, if you look at our percentage of where we are location-wise, it's pretty rare that we're at sort of a nice L.A. home.
Oh, this is the lovely Indian family that live here. They were very nice.
Were very nice to us and let us use their house for over two episodes, I believe, because it started in the episode before.
Let me go on with you.
And so, you know, this again is trying to find, and, you know, we were lucky enough that the house across the street had construction going on, so we were able to stage our SWAT guys. You want to try to be as realistic as you can with these guys as to where they are and where they're hiding, and, you know, you try as much as you can anyways to do that. Again, for time, we just sort of worked around the actual attack of the house. You know, we just got a couple of shots here of the guys moving in. And really, you just got to pick and choose your times when you go full out on some of this action and when you just kind of hint at it and play it cinematically and visually, which is kind of what we did on this show.
Now, the TV in the background there, the actual house has a big projection screen behind it.
That's right.
So we could shoot that. I built a wooden unit in front of their TV.
Right. Behind Graham, everything you see behind Graham, we actually built that whole unit there. And, you know, our big blowing up of the door was really just an air cannon with some debris in it. You'd actually never see the door blow up, but because it was around the corner, you get a feel for it. And this was interesting with Kiefer, you know, really, again, he's got a choice of being nice to his brother or doing his job, and it's very easy to see what he chooses first and quite simply puts the knee on his neck without a hesitation. And this really starts to set up sort of the relationship between Rena Sofer, who's his brother's wife, and himself, and getting to see the son and wondering what the relationship was between the two of these folks earlier on in their lives.
Stop looking at me like this has something to do with us, because it doesn't.
It's interesting because as a director on this show, there are some choices you don't get to make, even as an executive producer like I am, because we don't have the scripts as far in advance as we'd like. So, for example, this is a house that was picked by the director before me to really set up the relationship with Graham, and there was a big scene where, you know, Jack tortures his brother, and yep. You know, so it was really picked for those scenes. Suddenly my script comes out, and we're attacking it with a SWAT team, and I have this private conversation. So it's interesting that then I have to sort of say, okay, this is the house now. I can't change it. So how am I going to make something that's really adopting something that's being given to me, and I have to make it work. So it was interesting just trying to find a space and making sure it worked. And the kitchen worked well for us.
And I think
a little
changed a lot. I mean, even the director, Milan, before you, the interrogation scene, I think we were going to do upstairs in the bedroom.
Right. It was a big change on the day.
Milan, I think, may have been one of his first days of shooting, yeah. And his sort of meeting Kiefer for the first time. There's a discussion, and Kiefer doesn't think it would work better for Kiefer downstairs in an office, so right. we redressed the office downstairs.
It was
downstairs.
A very last-minute change.
And it worked, and I think it's certainly better than the sort of yeah. torture in a bedroom
fact,
with a bed in the background.
In actual fact, we used the exact same room as the living room, mm-hmm. because we did get a little stuck on space, and in my head, I needed all this geography that you're seeing here. You know, I wanted him seeing her to be blocked by the guy. Yeah. And it's really important to what the story is. I mean, these last looks here are things that aren't necessarily in the script sometimes, but are very sort of crucial to telling our story at 24. And again, all the geography of him waiting outside, I just had to sort of make it work with the place we had. Okay, James is, of course, biggest challenge for a director is the fact that he is a very tall gentleman and towers over most normal-sized people, including Rena. But, you know, we make it work. And one of your friends is coming up here, an actor that you actually brought to the show.
Oh, Burke's in
Marty,
this.
Yeah.
Marty. Yeah, I did a game for EA Games called Black, and we hired Marty to be the soldier. There he is.
There he is. There's Marty, and he's done great
he's
work for us.
He's
recurring now. I mean, yeah. We've brought him back. He had stuff last year and this year. And when you want to interrogate with the ugliest chemicals,
bring Agent Burke in.
That's when Agent Burke comes in. And Agent Burke, of course, the name comes from our first assistant director Nicole Burke. So it's actually, which the writers do all the time. They're constantly throwing people's names in. And this was, of course, my biggest challenge from a director's point of view, to pull this off, to make sure that I gave the actors a space to get to where they got in this scene. I mean, I'm working with two of the best on television right now, Paul McCrane and Kiefer, so, and then James Cromwell after that. But it's an absolutely fantastic scene. And there's a big part of our show, all the graphic stuff that we do constantly. And you're involved in that. You're involved
yeah.
in what those things look like.
Try and keep it as real as possible, or feel as real as possible.
It's real and different, I think, from what we try to, what we see on other shows on television. We try to have our own look and style. Again, this worked great. And, I think if you want, just for fun, you can put the two shows together, Mylan's show. The first time Jack interrogates his brother, and this time it's actually the same room, but the first time we dressed it as an office sort of around the corner, and this time we dressed it as the living room, which it really was in the house.
Drew the curtains.
We made it look a little different.
Oh, he's getting his bag.
Here comes Burke in his bag. And again, this, without saying anything, you're saying everything. Yeah. Watching him go by and the camera twirling around James, it worked really well.
I need to talk to you.
What is it?
New CTU next year? What do you think?
It's
2 years now, right? 2 years.
3 years.
Is it three on this one?
Yeah. Three on the old one, three on this one.
See how it goes by so quickly.
Seventh year.
Oh, it's three on each?
Yeah.
Well, that's got to be the limit for us, I think.
So. Time to move on.
Time to blow up CTU again. As much as we love it, too. I mean, it breaks my heart. It just never seems to to, you know, feel any emotion watching one of his sets get torn down. But I think that's because he gets to build another one. But
yeah, I don't mind at all.
It's amazing.
I build them and take a couple of photographs and that's it. I can move on. I have no problem with it.
Yeah, I think more people have a problem with actually watching the sets go than you do. Me being yeah. one, watching the, you know, Logan's Retreat sort of go away. Well, we didn't even get a chance to see it go away because
no,
we left
on hiatus.
And we came back. It was a big empty concrete space.
Yeah.
And actually the bunker from this year is built exactly on the same space. That Logan's Retreat was built on. And it was just such a great set. But I mean, again, I think this was the most comfortable the CTUs to work in, just because we got to really design it from scratch and we had a little more room to work on. To work on it, and I got to be involved, which I wasn't really involved in the first one.
So we'd had 3 years practicing on the old one to see what worked, what didn't.
Yeah, the offices being our biggest. The office and the conference room, the situation room, were always our biggest problems in the old set, just because they were built very tight, and you know, especially since you don't know how much you're going to use it and how much you're not. And after 3 years, you realize that you're in those spaces a lot. In the holding room, I think, was the other space. Although this year, someone sort of reminded me, I think we've been in there 3 times, and that was it.
Mm.
Compared to other years where we seem to live in the holding room, this year we've been there very, very, very few episodes, actually.
Yeah, I guess that's the only thing we would change. If we were to rebuild, it would be an easier shooting space for the holding room.
Yeah, even though we thought we were there this year, or when we first designed it, I think, well, again, you know, this year I think it wasn't such a problem because we were only in there 2 or 3 times. But when we first moved into the CTU, we just had a year that, you know, we seemed like every episode we were in there for a day and it just got a little tight. And it's great. It's starting to establish sort of this relationship between Carlos Broda, our friend from my Nikita days, with Joel and Bob Cochran. He was a regular on the show La Femme Nikita that we did.
Buchanan.
Bill is Jack. Did Chloe pull anything off the hard drives?
No, she came up empty.
Yeah, I thought you was at the Arras house for a moment.
You know, and then we're always making a choice whether we build or not, and that's it really depends on how many days you think you have in a script. And we build on the show. I don't know if we build more or less than anybody else, but we do. There's a fair number of sets that we do build because we need to. You know, we need to do certain things to them. For example, there's one set where we, you know, the apartment that you just saw briefly in this, we had a big shootout, so it just made more sense to build it than to actually find it. In this case, this house is a real place. You'll also notice when I'm in a real house, I make sure that you see out those windows and doors. I make a real effort to make sure the audience knows we're in a real house. It just kind of gets that sense of reality. Although this room could have been somewhere else because of the blown-out windows. We could have kind of done that on set.
Yeah, I don't think he would have recognized what was outside that window anyway. It's so blown
not
out.
Really. And again, we were trying to make it a little different than the first time that we did it. One of my biggest challenges as a director on this show is to keep these tortures fresh. I know you help get involved in that too. I know when we read the script, we're always trying to go, okay, well, we did the drill, we did the knife in the shoulder, we did the, you know, so it's, you know, and we laugh at it, and it's not, you know, real torture obviously is not something you want to laugh at, but in our case, it is a really just an entertainment, and it's a device for our characters. I mean, this scene here is more about the moral question is about, would you torture your brother to get this information? Most people wouldn't, but Jack Bauer, it's country first, so it's about saving lives, so he would. So that really is what the scene becomes about. It's not really the torture. It's about the moral question of it. You know, so in this case, you know, instead of having Jack smack him around, which he could have, or stick a knife in his shoulder, we went to the, you know, we went to the drug route, and actually it worked well for the script because, you know, he eventually has too much and you know, something happens. But, you know, I mean, these actors put their hearts out, both of them on the scene. It's just great work. Paul McCrane was wonderful for us.
How do I fight McCarthy?
Damn you.
Again,
I was trying to, you know, get the connection and trying to get the dad. So we put the monitors sort of outside the room. I think at one point, Dad was just standing there watching, which didn't really feel right to me.
Yeah, I think so. And the door opening.
So we had this video set up, and sort of he was over looking some guy's shoulder, a CTU agent's shoulder, and watching what was happening. Damn, it's hard to watch even now.
I know it's here not, with my mouth open,
we're cringing. I know it's not real. It's hard to watch. But again, that's, you know, these wonderful actors sort of putting themselves on the line. And then this was tough in the script to pull this off. I had to get Paul and the character Graham to a point where he would, you know, make this admission of killing Palmer and killing Tony and Michelle. You know, I had to get him to that point. I had to get him to such a point of torture and pain that he would say all this and be believable to us as the audience. You know, and again, he pulled it off. And Kiefer's look here is just great.
I love my country.
You know, and then I love the fact that you find out that he's no better or less a patriot than,
right,
than Jack,
than Jack
is. He's just got a different sort of a approach on it. Which, you know, our writers do incredibly well is keep writing these, you know, our villains, our bad guys with motivations that are almost understandable, you know. That's, of course, a stuntman that we knocked over, not Paul, but he's pretty good double, actually.
They got the syringe! Do it!
Now here's Paul Burke getting a gun pointed to his head.
There's somebody in here now!
Although he was smart enough to call someone.
Yeah. No, he does. He's the
pretty
only one
cool.
That stood up to Jack, even Burke. He's probably the only person who's ever stood
probably
up.
Probably why he keeps coming back. And again, you know, I think there was some dialogue in here where James had, you know, screamed out, "Jack, stop." And I thought, you have James Cromwell. Yeah. You don't need dialogue. There you go. All you need is that look. You know, that look that a father gives to a son that is more about disappointment than scolding. And so I think you see it one more time here. Look at that look. I mean, he's just great. And, you know, Jack becomes a child again, being scolded by his dad for beating up his brother.
Right. You should kick him in the way.
I love the fact that after all said and done, really, that's what it's about. Paul just did a great job. This is another set that we built. You've got to understand that when we, you know, when we have a couple of pages, which usually represents one scene, like we have here, it just is not cost effective for us to move a whole unit to a real place. So, in actual fact, Joseph built this hospital room and hallway.
Yeah, it's just a simple room and a bit of corridor, and make it as long as possible so we can get some depth, because there's a conversation going to happen outside the front door. So you're not just shooting against a blank wall. This year, all my colours, I try to make this season quite dark. So even this hospital room, it's a dark blue.
Yeah, that is pretty dark for a hospital room.
Yeah. This is going to be a dark,
dark
year.
Season.
Yeah, this is a dark year.
Year six, the dark year. But it's interesting for me, too, because, again, it's a simple scene. But if the set is too simple... You know, and that's our challenge always, you know, balancing the money as to what we can build and what's important. But I'm pretty specific in my shot, so I know that together we were able to get the most from the money.
Everything we've built, you've seen in this scene, because you told me what you needed, and I just build exactly what you need.
And so, you know, here we get it. I mean, I think there's another shot coming up where you can actually see right down the hallway, but... It starts to feel real. I mean, she could have made this phone call easily in one room, in the room that she was in with him, and we could have made it really nice and simple. But again, just that one little added beat of moving out into the hall and seeing down the hallway just made it interesting. And then what was interesting, too, is that I think there's a shot from behind the glass of her, too, and we're shooting him from behind the glass. So they're in their own little cages, both of them, for me. I like the idea that they were both stuck in their little glass cubicles. You know, and their lives are parallel that way.
Wayne, I'm scared.
It was fun in the script, too, the fact that this phone call came at a time where he's trying to make his decision. And again, it's a little fake out for the audience where we're really not sure what decision he's going to make.
This is all we got. I still don't have a clear image.
What are you doing?
I'm downloading.
And again, you know, our show is chock full of this computer stuff. We have great guys putting it together. Olivier, who works very hard, sort of constantly putting these screens together. And it's a very rare episode of 24 where we don't really see a whole bunch of them.
Entire conspiracy. He was trying to protect the company. That's what he's trying to do now.
Again, here I was trying to use it, take advantage of the fact that we're at a real place in a real location. Let's see outside. Let's see that we're there. We think it may contain an image of McCarthy. And Jack actually sitting down, which is incredibly rare.
As soon as my brother's ready for transport, I want him sent back. To
just needed an apple and a sandwich.
And a trip to the washroom, and everyone would be so happy.
The cable on the left there.
It's a hose.
It's not.
Don't tell people it's a cable. It's a hose.
Could have been pushed in a little further.
And then, yeah, the challenge always of going from inside to outside is how bright it is. And see, this was so important for me, this geography. So that's why I needed that room to be there.
Yep.
You know, I wanted that connection to the door, the ability for him to look in, see one guy, his brother, the ability to look to the other side, see his father. You know, suddenly if you have to walk down a hallway to do that, it loses that connection. And, you know, in other shows, it's not that big a deal because you could do a time cut. But yeah. In our show, geography becomes incredibly important because you're playing everything, you know, in real time, minute by minute. It is a challenge.
I'll tell you what isn't fair.
Yeah, after 24, everything else will be just
such
freedom.
It's very strange. It's actually very strange. I'm working on pilot right now, and I keep forgetting I can actually just say, let's go to that house, and we can be at that house.
Yeah.
I don't actually have to watch someone get in a car, drive, make a phone call. So it is a very different way of shooting. You know, again, I think the popularity of our show really comes down to these kind of scenes. You know, and as well as we do the action and the SWAT guys running around and all of that, I think really comes down to moments like this. You know, that's so strong. Interrupted by Agent Burke.
Dad, I want you to go back to CTU. Okay.
It's all about the character. That's really comes down to for our show. All the other stuff is icing on the cake.
They're sending a chopper for me. I have to go.
They actually kind of look like father and son.
I was
they?
Just thinking that the scene, like 10 seconds before, thinking, you know what?
There's moments
it does
that kind of look the same. Great handheld work from Guy. Our camera operator has been with us for the whole 6 years. His ability to make those kind of moves with the actor.
That graphic takes forever to reveal, and then it reveals too quick at the end.
Well, that's that program that he had written. It's restoring another photo. You know, it is a problem. These are some of the hardest things that the writers write that then have to be translated. Yeah. You know, to say that this program is doing what it's doing over that amount of time and not being recognizable till we really want it to be recognizable is a great little script conceit. But then to actually do it, oh my God, a stock shot.
Congratulations, Thomas.
This is a tidy little set. Thank
you very much. Yeah, again, you know, we had... At the time, we only had two or three phone calls, and
yeah.
I think you're looking at the two walls
that's
are on
pretty
the
much
set.
The whole set.
It was that back brown wall and the side wall with the windows in it.
Yeah, and it just comes a little further than his desk.
And this was funny. You know, Powers, first of all, what a pleasure to work with Powers Booth, and he came in.
Nice shot.
You like that shot, don't you?
I saw the episode last week, and you did it the same thing. Yeah. I was like, nice shot.
It's that wide shot that's so rare on our show from up high like that. And I like to do it every once in a while because it does then look out of place.
It's a TiVo moment for me. Yeah. I pause at that point.
If you're doing it every scene, then you're suddenly, there's... there's nothing special about it. But when you do those big high overhead shots,
and I love that sort of thing, Powers looking out the window. Kiefer used to do that a lot, or still does, when we don't have a set outside a door or out something, to actually get the actor to look. It sells
it feel real.
So well.
Well, Powers is an amazing actor, and it's really funny because, you know, this was actually my, I think this was my first scene with him.
Yeah.
It's definitely, my first scene. And I think he had one other scene in the show before where he's talking on the same set because he's traveling to the White House. And, you know, I remember him going, wow, you guys got me to do a couple of scenes. And it's like, dude, you're going to be so into this show. So, you know, as the season moves on, you realize what an important character he is. But, you know, his first two scenes were phone calls on a plane where he barely said anything.
Yeah.
I mean, he mostly listens in this scene. But, you know, it was about establishing him, getting him, starting to set him up, knowing where we were going with the story and that he would eventually take over.
Law enforcement to stop fire.
How does my plan...
You know, because, again, unlike other shows where an actor of this caliber would come on and have, you know, a lot to do in our show, because it's only one of... you know, the next 15, 20 episodes he's going to be in, it's really just a setup. So, but again, his nuances are just, you know, tailor-made for our show, those little moments.
And such a small scene to establish where that character's coming from or where it might go is so difficult. You know, if you get a script for a movie, he can read the whole thing and know
where
he's going. It's his first day. He's on an airplane by himself. Hear your line.
It is difficult. And that's, you know, as a director, that's where you have to sort of try to, you know, be that bridge to what's potentially coming up and trying to, you know, gauge a performance, like you're saying, in a way that, you know, most actors, whether it's an episode of television or old television or a feature, can read the middle, beginning, and end. And so they always gauge a performance based on that. Where am I in the middle? Am I moving to the end? Am I getting to the climactic scene? And, of course, in our case, you get a guy in, he's got two scenes. He has no idea where he's going. So it is a little more difficult. But, you know, one thing I learned from Kiefer in the way when he was asked, how do you do it? How do you, you know, play a scene without knowing where it's going? He said, quite simply, you play the scene, and that's all you play.
Yeah.
You don't try to play it, you know, to what's coming up. You don't try to, you know, foreshadow. You just play the scene for what it is. And that's really always my advice to all of these actors that come in and aren't used to our world. I mean, our regulars are very used to it, but guest stars always have that, where am I going next? They want to know, and it's really, don't worry about that. Play the scene for what it is.
He got a call claiming his brother was in the hospital.
And there finally is Carlo.
I still think, at that point it should still be broken up a little bit. But anyway.
And this is always a challenge for us. Anytime we're doing car work. Yes, this is my my Jag. My little green Jag convertible that Carlo gets to ride in.
Is this outside the stage? It is probably.
This is the close-up stuff is outside the stage. This was done, believe it or not, that's about 4 different days of shooting that we did that. And there aren't bullet holes in my seat. We had a little cover put on there.
Don't talk, move. Come on, let's go.
And again, the big surprise that Carlo's the one they always wanted. In fact, if you search back on the show and you see the monitor, when he's sitting in that bedroom set we were talking about with the rear screen projection, there is a CTU screen on that monitor out of focus.
Oh, yeah, in the hospital.
You'd have to look at it very carefully. So that was our first hint. And then I've got to give kudos to Jeff Caliente here for this action scene. He's our stunt coordinator, and he virtually designed it all. And this is the
helicopter stuff.
Yes, is it now or is it the next episode? I think it might be the next episode. Yeah, that's right. It's the next episode. But here's a set that, again, we're only seeing briefly, but we'll see very clearly in the next episode with the big shootout to come.
Oh, I shot this bit.
That's right. That's you. That's your second unit directing world on a weekend. And then the next episode is where the big action scene is. So that's a tease for the next episode.
Right.
Put that next episode in the DVD player and watch it. You know, and this was, again, the logistics of these guys leaving and the dad being able to come in, you know, to help that. That's why I had Agent Burke interrupt them. So he was able to see that they had a relationship, that Jack and his father, you know, had a relationship. So he wasn't hesitant to let him come in here. That's, you know, the logistics of that is always tough for us. Another thing to watch for, too, is that James actually doesn't close the door because he didn't think he would. But if you listen to the sound effect, the door closes. So you got to watch it carefully. There's a little gap left in the door, but the sound effect is the door closing. So.
Maybe he is. So.
You know, and again, this was an important moment for us. And if, you know, we try to end the show with Jack as often as we can. It's very rare that we don't end with him, but in a particular scene like this, you definitely don't miss Jack as much as you would in other shows, only because it's such a strong final scene. You know, and it's a big
reveal.
I was
just thinking, they took all the equipment out, but he's still wired up.
Well, they weren't finished. They were still working on it. You know, it's tough. I mean, that's the hardest stuff for us. And you've got to look the other way. I mean, you just can't make everything real. You've got to slave to the fact that you're still telling a story. And in our case, we're still telling a...
Well, he's still on the IV to get all that stuff out of him.
That's what it is. See, there's always an explanation. It's always an explanation of why things are happening. And again, you want to hope that the scene is so strong that, you know, you're not thinking about those little details. And we, you know, we do... As a group here, we you know, eliminate as many of those things that jump out at us when we read the scripts as possible. We really try to make them real, and the writers are glad to sort of, you know, make those adjustments because it's a key to our show. But there are certain things that I know the audience sort of always picks up on, but you know, they're there for story reasons. Again, this becomes a big part of, you know, what happens in the next few episodes.
You've been a good boy. Done everything I asked.
And again, that's the moral questions of, you know, a dad killing his own son. I mean, this family is really screwed up. Jack actually ends up looking...
He's the sane one, isn't he?
he's the sane one in this family. You would have never guessed that, but once you see these episodes... And again, amazing work by these gentlemen. And it's funny because even James had, you know, not knowing what was coming up, not knowing what his storylines were, you know, and the fact that we try to keep as many levels to our characters as possible, he wasn't sure about, you know, the fact that, you know, he still was a father. And so this kiss was a conversation that, you know, we had to have. And he finally sort of said, yeah, I guess, you know, I'll do the kiss.
Right.
But there was something in him that just kept saying, I'm the bad guy. Why would I do that? But, you know, really, that's he's still your son. You did it out of necessity. And he was able to understand that. And I think, again, that's our, you know, and it was written. It's you know, the writers wrote that kiss, that moment to be there.
I swear, you're going to regret it for the rest.
You know, but again, he does a great job with this, even his last piece where you can tell maybe... Hope you enjoyed it.